Ladies and gentlemen, start your engines. It's time to get revved up for sports, and guess what? More sports on the RPM Roundtable Podcast with Robin Clark, Paul McCaughey, and Mike Sesney.
This is the RPM Roundtable Podcast on Thursday, May 9th. I'm Paul, along with Robin and Mike. We're returning after a two-week break in between semesters, so new beginnings for us. Let's get right into it. By now, everyone knows that last night the Toronto Maple Leafs fell 4-3 in overtime to the Boston Bruins. David Krejci notched a hat trick, including the winner in overtime. I want to start by asking you, Mike, who has been the most annoying player in this series so far, if you could pinpoint somebody?
Well, in terms of the Leafs or in terms of Boston?
Overall.
Let's start with Ryan O'Byrne, because he's really hard to watch play defense. He's been on the bad side of a lot of giveaways for the Leafs and bad defensive zone plays. I think also, I mean, on the Boston side, I would say actually maybe Danny Pailla, because he's a fourth liner, but yet he's chipping in offensively pretty well for Boston, and he's really causing a mess for the Leafs, yeah, matchup-wise. They seem to get the matchups they want, but then there's always somebody else for the Bruins that steps up for them when they need it.
Robin, what about yourself? Anyone stand out to you as being annoying in this series?
Actually, not particularly, because going into a series like this, you'd sort of expect a guy like Brad Marchand to cause, you know, some trouble for the opposing team, but he hasn't been a focal point at all. I think the main focus on Boston obviously has been Krejci. He's stepped up and delivered, and Tyler Seguin hasn't done much of anything, and so the Leafs have done a really good job of shutting him down, but as you saw last night, that wasn't enough. And also, obviously, Zdeno Chara, 4 assists in the game last night, playing huge minutes. He played over 33 minutes last night. And even though Kessel's had a decent series, Chara's done a pretty good job of shutting him down.
Yeah, and, you know, actually, the Marchand thing, you'd think he would, like you said, be a big pest. But for some reason, it seems like the Leafs are really, they're not buying into his crap this series. And I think that's different from former or previous series, where Marchand was definitely the biggest agitator on the ice. Last year's playoffs were an example of that, and the year prior to that as well, and even just given all season. I mean, he has the ability to get under a lot of teams' skin, except for some reason, I don't think the Leafs are buying into it this year, and they're kind of staying away from the gooniness, actually, and I don't know. I mean, it's funny because we thought prior to the playoffs, we thought that this series would be really it would be really goony, and that the Leafs would have to goon it up maybe a bit to win. And you saw that in game one for sure. And it didn't really work out too well for them. So I think they've made the adjustments. But at the same time, you wonder if how much that regular season play, and the fact that they were able to do that all regular season and have success in it, and then come at the playoffs when people said, oh, there's no fighting in the playoffs, so the Leafs are going to not do so well. And it's kind of so far translated. And the fact that they can't get any secondary scoring from any of their other lines besides Lupul and Kessel. And last night MacArthur scored, but it was kind of lost in everything else.
So let's talk about the game-winning goal last night. Faneuf, they're in, obviously, the Leaf zone. Faneuf tries to pinch, right? Or sorry, they're in Boston zone. Faneuf tries to pinch. The puck gets loose. Krejci picks it up and basically goes all the way to the other end for a goal. Would that be how you saw the play, Mike?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a terrible pinch, but it happens, you know, routinely in any game that's going to happen. There's a ton of... It's hard, easy for us to say watching it was a bad pinch. I mean, it's even worse in overtime in that situation. But you can't also just hang the whole thing on Faneuf, because the Leafs were up 2-0 at one point, and they had some definite mental lapses. There was one thing I saw particularly. It was an offensive zone face-off for the Leafs, and Kadri lost the draw, turned it over. Boston came down the wing, and then he took a high sticking penalty because he wasn't moving his feet, and it resulted in a 4-minute power play for the Bruins. And there's just a lot of different problems that they had all night, and to hang it all on Phaneuf, I mean, Rask was incredible in overtime, and the Leafs had a flurry of chances that easily could have been a Leafs win before overtime too. So,
and wasn't there something like 180 shots in total in that game between the two teams? Is that?
I think maybe attempted, not actually on net, but attempted shots. That sounds about right for sure.
That's a frantic pace. Yeah. Robin, I wanted to ask you, how do you feel about James Reimer's performance last night?
Reimer was fine. I don't love the overtime goal. I think that needs to be saved for sure. But other than that, I don't really have any complaints, and I don't think that most people should. Like Mike was saying, everyone said, oh, Phaneuf, that's a horrible play, the game's on you, blah, blah, blah. And he did come out afterwards and say that he shouldn't be making that play, and he owned up to it, which I guess is good. But, I mean, I don't think it's fair to hang it all on him. That's a very stoppable puck. Reimer got a big piece of it, and it trickled through. And, I mean, the guy played 31 minutes. He had 10 hits, 6 blocked shots, and I mean, he's done everything for them this year, and I still don't understand the criticism.
Well, I think he's had a bad series, though, overall.
Fair.
And he hasn't, I mean, other than last night when he took the blame for the loss, he hasn't had the best series. And I don't know if he's been the leader that they need him to be, besides playing against the other team's best players and being the guy that eats up the most minutes on D.
Yeah, I just want to go back to Reimer for a second. I agree, he played well last night. But from what I saw, it just seemed like every save that he made was epic. I don't know if it was just the moment or if he was really sort of going beyond anything he'd ever done before last night.
Well, I mean, he made good saves too, but at the same time, there was a ton of rebounds he gave up, and I know he's notorious for that. And the Leafs were good at finding the rebounds and getting them away from the net. But if those rebounds fell onto Boston's sticks, they would have been in the net too. So
he also faced 45 shots and stopped 41 of them. So, I mean, I don't know how anyone could have a lot of complaints about that.
Yeah,
as
no,
I said,
he did his part for
outside
sure.
Outside of the OT goal. So.
He did his part. But it was just a team. I mean, it's got to be disheartening too at some point when you put so many shots on Rask and none of them seem to be going in. The fact that they had the early lead and then they just couldn't sustain it, that's the thing that sticks out to me. And the fact that they had that 2-0 lead going into the second period, and then all of a sudden Boston gets that quick goal in the second on the power play, and that's the way she went.
Now, we obviously hope that the Leafs can win Game 5 and at least get one more home game in the playoffs. What do you guys think? Do you think the game's going to come back to Toronto, or the series will come back to Toronto?
I think so. I think the Leafs can go in and steal one in Boston. I mean, if they play the way they did or close to it, I think they have a pretty good chance to win the game in Boston. You come home, have another home game, who knows what can happen, and then it's Game 7 and it's one game. So I'm not trying to look too far ahead, and obviously this series is probably over, but who knows?
I'd like to see it go to another game, but just, I mean, for the city alone, it would be a really good thing. But I think we're missing the biggest controversy of the night, and that was the April Reimer and Alicia Cuthbert stare down at the end of the game after the goal in overtime. That was pretty epic, and I know that now we've kind of learned that was not what happened, actually. Apparently, they were rolling their eyes at somebody who was sitting near them who made some kind of a jerk comment. But at the time, it looked like she kind of gave her the stink eye there for a minute, and Alicia Cuthbert kind of brushed it off. But
yeah, that was pretty funny, and it was also hilarious that CBC throughout the whole game, whenever they were focusing on her, was, you know, introducing her as Reimer's mother and sister.
Yeah.
And so I don't know where they got their information from.
You know what? The other question I posed to myself was, Is Alicia Cuthbert and April Reimer, are they as bad as the fans in Toronto? Are they just fair weather? Are they only there in the playoffs?
Like, probably.
I didn't see them all year, and I didn't see them all last year. So,
did you guys even know that Cuthbert and Phaneuf were still dating?
I did, yeah, actually.
Aren't they engaged?
Yeah, see, I didn't know that they were still together. So that first of all, that struck me in that moment. But, yeah, I'd prefer to keep it as that they were mad at each other about the final play. I think that's just the funnier way to look at it.
I thought
it was
more fun, too. Yeah. They had to go and ruin everything. And I did know they were dating. I'm very up on my entertainment news.
Very impressive. I just want to touch on one more thing with this series. Robin, you were down at Maple Leaf Square for Game 3. Right, you took in the atmosphere there.
I did.
I know it probably wasn't. You weren't there last night, were you?
No, I wasn't.
And I know the atmosphere last night was probably even better than Game 3. But can you describe how that was?
Yeah, it was pretty wild. I mean, I got down there about 45 minutes before the game, and I didn't even get close to the big screen. And so, I mean, you're standing there with about 20,000 other screaming fans, and like, they had the sound on. At first, I didn't even think that the sound was up, but it was just so loud from, you know, everyone just talking. And I think last night, as opposed to the game that I was there, people were obviously upset that they lost, but they still went away with being happy because it was the first home playoff game. And obviously, I wasn't there last night, so I can't comment on this. But I think people were really nervous going into that game. I know that everyone here was talking about how, you can't go down 3-1. You're not going to go into Boston and win two games. And so, I mean, I chose not to go for a couple of reasons. I felt if they lost, that would just be the worst feeling to be down there. And it's also kind of insane standing for 3+ hours to watch the game on a little, square. And it was an experience to take in for sure, but not something that I would want to do for every game.
And were they selling beer?
They were selling beer in a small section in the middle that I think you probably would have had to arrive at about 3 o'clock to get into.
So what were people doing? Were people drinking or?
Yeah.
Like just bringing in their own stuff? Or?
Yeah, exactly.
That's pretty much.
If it was me, I would be brown bagging it. Sure. That's 3 hours of standing is quite a long time.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, there were some police and security around there, but not enough to stop people.
The one thing I wish they had done that I think would have been pretty cool is if they could have pumped the noise from outside also into the stadium somehow and just had, like, double the noise.
Yeah, that would have been crazy.
But that's a story.
It got a little quiet at some points last night inside for sure.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, there was really a nervous kind of.
Yeah.
Which is understandable, but that overtime was pretty wild.
Yeah, it was great. That's the thing, right? They lost, but at least getting into the playoffs, having some games at home, and then having an overtime playoff game doesn't get
much
better.
Yeah, there's really nothing better than that. Yeah,
so.
I'm basically trying to decide in my mind where we start as far as the Jays conversation. Overall, they've won 3 of their last 4. If they win today in Tampa, they can take 3 out of 4 in that series. There's been a couple interesting moments in this series. Obviously, Hap getting hit in the head, going down. But now it appears that his knee sprain is a bigger issue than him getting popped in the head. And then yesterday, well, let's start with Romero. Romero goes a third of an inning, gives up 3 runs. He faces 7 batters, 6 reach base. And when he leaves the game, the bases are loaded just for good measure. What do you do right now? What are your thoughts on this team?
Well, I mean, they sent him down.
Yeah.
And I just remember last week when they were bringing him up for the first time this year, there was the conversation that was being had was, did they work out his problems or was this a rush move to bring him up? And the worry was that he's going to go out there, he's going to get shelled, and then his confidence is going to go back to being absolutely shattered again. So, I mean, this was really a nightmare scenario, I think, yesterday coming in, and that's probably the worst thing that a pitcher can do besides not get anybody out in the first inning. But he pitched a third of an inning. and he ended up giving up three earned runs, which could have been a lot worse, really, if Edgar Gonzalez didn't come in and mop up his bases-loaded jam. And, I mean, for me, the biggest thing was how much he fell behind in the count. I mean, right off the bat, first batter fell behind the count. Then he gave up the two walks. I think it was to Longoria and Zobrist. And then just that, that was just the recipe for disaster right off the bat. And you'd think, you know, he got some run support there in the first inning from Encarnacion's two-run home run. And you thought maybe that would give him a bit of confidence starting in the first inning, but it just all fell apart and unraveled. And I don't know. I don't know what to think of Romero now, because to me, I think he's done. I don't know if this can be fixed or not.
See, here's my thoughts on that. I think I totally agree with you that he got called up too early and it was rushed, and it forced the Jays' hand when Josh Johnson got injured. They didn't have a choice. And then the thing with Hap. But I also totally disagree with what Gibbons did. You're given a two-run lead by Encarnacion's homer. So I understand you don't want to have Romero in there to give up six or seven runs and the game's over at the end of the first inning. But at the same time, if he's up and pitching as a starting pitcher in the big leagues, you got to give him a chance to work it out. I don't know why Gibbons or anyone else would think that Edgar Gonzalez was going to do a better job. I mean, the long man in the bullpen this year for the Jays, well, there's been, you know, six or seven of them, and they've all been shelled. And yeah, Gonzalez ate some innings, but I think he gave up, what, five runs? And has now been designated for assignment? So that tells you what the Jays think about him. And so I understand that Ricky didn't have his best stuff, but it's not like he gave up three doubles and a pair of home runs. And yeah, the walks were bad, and that plagued him in spring training, obviously. But he gave up a couple of bouncing balls, one through the left side and one through the right side. And so if those are another couple of inches, then he's out of the inning. They're ground balls, and he maybe even gets a double play on the last hitter that he faced.
I disagree because of the walks and the falling behind, though. Because if he didn't give up the walks, then the little, you know, bloop hits and the infield hits would have been meaningless. It wouldn't have even put anything on the board.
But see, why is he only allowed two walks, and then a guy like Jay Happ in his last start, not the one where he got hit, I think he had five or six walks before he was finally taken out.
It wasn't that so much as the fact that he loaded the bases too. And I think, I don't know, I heard after in the post game that Gibbons had said he's got his responsibility, or he owes it to the rest of the 25 guys on the team to keep them in the game. So that was one of the reasons he pulled Romero. And in a season where they want to have success, it's not really about developing a guy and you know, finding out if he's okay or not. It's a win now. And I don't know, I kind of liked him pulling him out of there. I'd rather see him pulled out before it's, you know, 7-0.
That's fair, 7-2. But like, it's not like last year where if they went to the bullpen early, you've got a guy like Carlos Villanueva who's actually...
Yeah.
And I know he started, but I mean at the beginning of the year when those guys would get pulled out early, Villanueva's good. They haven't had a good long man the whole season. I mean, they've tried Aaron Laffey. They've tried Gonzalez.
Lincoln wasn't bad, but the problem was is he pitched the day before.
Right.
Because of this, almost the same thing.
Yeah.
And that's the only thing I disagree with, is that I like them pulling Romero out of there, but at the same time, you got to wonder, too, was it smart in hindsight? Because the day before, you had your guy only in there for two innings before he got hit in the head or whatever it was. So I know the talk was about trying to get somebody deep into this ball game because they already taxed their bullpen the day before, after the Hap freak accident. So, I don't know, it's funny because the decision I think was right, but at the same time, I don't know if it was right under those circumstances in that context, but I still agree with the move.
Well, I think he's getting some different treatment. We've seen R.A. Dickey have some pretty bad games. he's given up grand slams and remained in the game, right? Like, after a grand slam, you might think the manager might come out and take the ball from the guy. But no, he's had a chance to work through those mistakes.
Well, I don't know. Romero didn't win the Cy Young last year either, though, so it's kind of different, right? I think it's different.
It's different, but they're both important to this pitching staff right now.
Yeah, if a game is a game, right, then I don't think that it should be that different. I mean, against Boston, did Dickey not give up, what, four runs before he even got an out? Against Boston at home two starts ago, and then he gave up, what, seven runs in the first two innings or six before he finally, I think he ended up lasting five or six innings, but he wasn't good in the first two innings. And so, yeah, I don't really know what the message to Romero there was, and then they send him down. I don't understand it at all.
I think mentally it's going to be really tough for him to bounce back from this.
Because, yeah, given how fragile he is. It's
because, you know, next time he goes in there, he's going to be looking over his shoulder basically thinking, you know, if I make one mistake, I might be out of here.
And let's hope he didn't go on Twitter last night.
Probably not.
Because that would, yeah. You want to talk about having no confidence, he would be absolutely devastated.
So are we going to make a trip down to Buffalo to show our support for Ricky Romero?
Yeah.
Yeah, seriously. I think we should.
I want to go down alone just to see Ghost steal home because I saw that play and that was pretty spectacular.
Yeah, from what I've heard, it's pretty good baseball down there right now.
Yeah, they've actually got a decent team. They're hitting like crazy.
Just not Ghost.
Yeah. So, if he could ever learn how to hit, he'd be up here. But
is that it? That's all, because obviously he's got the speed, and I'm sure he's a decent fielder.
Yeah, that's the knock on him so far.
Well, that's the thing, right? Everyone's saying, you know, get Rasmus out of there, whatever. But Rasmus is basically doing what in terms of average, Rasmus is doing at the major league level what Ghost is doing at AAA.
Wow.
Yeah. And so that he's not, in my opinion at least, he's not anywhere near ready for the major leagues.
You can have all the speed in the world, but if you can't get on base to use it, what's the sense?
Yeah, you can't steal first, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Although he did steal home two nights ago, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That play was awesome. It was a really good show of his speed. Actually, you know who I like down there is Luis Jimenez. I think he's DHing for them or playing first base as well. He reminds me of a mini Prince Fielder, but not really mini by any terms because he's a pretty big guy. But he's hitting bombs. I saw a highlight of him hitting a bomb the other day to right field, and it was over. I think it was out of the park, actually. It was pretty impressive. But he's got a really good, like a really violent swing, kind of Prince Fielder swing.
So just to sum up this segment, we started off talking about the Toronto Blue Jays, and I think it shows what type of season it's been when at the end we were talking about their AAA team.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This has shades of last year with all these pitching injuries now, and it's very disheartening. I mean, being a Jays fan, but you wonder how much that hype machine at the start of the year really put a lot of pressure on them. And I mean, I guess you could have seen it coming too, in a sense, because Burley he's a fly ball guy and he's giving up home runs in a small park. That, you know, that could have been predicted, I guess. You always want to think the best, but, and Jose Reyes, I mean, the freak accident, but how long was it really till the wonky knees started to feel it on the AstroTurf after, you know, half a season or by the time we even got to the All-Star break, so.
And Robin, sorry, I remember you saying a while back that you're not really going to start looking at the record until after 60 games. Do you still feel that way?
Well, here's the thing. I think that I don't think you can win the division or win anything until sort of June 1st type of deal. That's when I start to really pay attention to the standings and, you know, focus on another game and see, okay, look, well, the White Sox are beating Boston, so that's good. And if the Jays win, they're X games back, blah, blah, blah. But so I don't think you can win the division before June 1st, but I definitely think you can lose it by, you know, burying yourself. And so I think right now the Jays are at 13-22.
Yeah.
Yep. And 3.5 games back.
Right. And so, I mean, if they're 5 games back on June 1st, I think that's perfectly fine. And I don't think that people should freak out. 5 games to make up in 4 months, about. I don't think that's difficult at all.
No, it's definitely a grind.
as bad as they've been, they've got a good chance. I just don't know, with Romero going down, Hap injured, Johnson potentially injured, Morrow might be, what, pushed back until Sunday, I think.
Yeah, he's going to miss his start.
So I don't know who the starting rotation is. Brett Cecil's been great with a 1.5 ERA or something like that in 20-ish innings.
Yeah.
But how would that translate into starting? And
well,
is
and
he even stretched
yeah,
out?
Yeah, I don't think he's stretched out either, so.
So I don't know. Is it Lincoln? Is it
Ortiz? I would guess it's going to be Lincoln if I had to pick, but I don't know how long he's stretched out either. But, I mean, if you want to slap together some sort of Lincoln-Ramon-Ortiz combo to start, you know, maybe have Lincoln go out there for 5 innings. It'll be interesting to see. It's pretty – it's disappointing. It's like a Band-Aid, you know. It looks like the MASH unit in there right now again, so.
I think they could send a message. I know it's just one game, but if Dickey can manage to outpitch David Price today and the Jays can win the series, I think that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's a good
It'll
start.
It'll be a step in the right direction, that's for sure. It's, and against a team, they need to pass right now, so.
Yeah.
And then you go into Boston and you see what happens.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, with some very shoddy pitching probably on the weekend.
Yeah, well, it's not like Boston's pitching either right now.
That's
other
true.
Other than Buchholz, because of his sunscreen and whatever the hell else is on his arm. Go check that out if you don't know what we're talking about.
I like that. That's pretty funny.
So this is from an incident that took place in the game last night between the Cleveland Indians and the Oakland Athletics. Adam Rosales of the Oakland A's thought he hit a game-tying home run. The Athletics, Indians, and 14,000 or so fans thought so too. There was a small group who differed, the umpires. Bob Melvin, the Oakland manager, said, probably the only 4 people in the ballpark that didn't see the home run. Robin, what are your thoughts on that one? And maybe just take us through the play, because I know you saw it.
Yeah, sure. So basically there were 2 outs in the 9th inning, and Rosales hit what should have been a home run. It hit off, I believe, there's like a metal railing or something like that sort of hangs over the top of the fence in Cleveland. And there's a yellow line that goes across the top of the green padding in center field. And the rule is if it hits above the line, then it's a home run. And basically, it was ruled a double on the field. The Oakland manager came out, asked the umps to look at it, which he's allowed to do. So they went in. There was a lengthy review for, I think, 7 or 9 minutes or something like that. They showed a number of replays on TV, both on the Cleveland feed and on the Oakland feed. And it clearly showed that the ball hit this railing or fencing or whatever it was before coming back onto the field. And I don't know what the umpire, Angel Hernandez, saw on the replay, but he stuck with the call and ruled it a double.
Yeah, and if you see the replay, too, there's, like, no question that it bounces off the fence or off that railing. It's, like, completely obvious. And I think it was Buster Olney this morning was saying that I believe the league has the power to start the game in the 9th as if the home run happened and then, continue it from there, basically.
Could you imagine that, though?
Well, I mean, it would be, like Robin said earlier, for a league that doesn't want instant replay in their stadiums to expose, you know, referee human error mistakes. This one's not even human error. This is human error big time. This is, you've had the aid of video equipment and the replay, and you don't get it right. And Angel Hernandez, I mean, I know he's been involved in quite a few controversial plays and calls, so.
I've got a couple of funny things here. Sorry, Mike, to cut you off, but says a 2006 Sports Illustrated poll of Major League players listed Hernandez as the 3rd worst umpire in Major League Baseball.
I think this shoots him up to the top of the list.
Bob Davidson, because of that triple play that wasn't in 92. But,
well, this was pretty bad.
Yeah, it was. It was.
Can you see the commissioner actually stepping in here and saying something?
I don't know. I think just because it's baseball and how baseball works is they're just going to leave it how it is and Oakland's going to have to suffer.
That's pathetic. They can't even show a replay on the scoreboard at the game if it might make the umpire look bad. And that's the umpire's union or whatever with way too much power.
Yeah.
And it's awful.
I know. I've noticed that at the Rogers Center in recent years.
There have been less and less. And I know that the rule is that one member of the media after the game, like say something like this happens, can go down and knock on the door of the umpires. And they can choose whether they want to come and explain or talk to the media. But they don't have to if they don't want to. And I don't know why they ever would, but it's ridiculous. And I don't understand how that's still the system.
Well, I would be shocked if the umpires weren't at least sort of given a talking to by someone in the league office over a play like that.
Well, I don't even understand how that happens. Like, what were they looking at?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's clear. Like, it's clear as day.
Yeah.
It's like one of those mysteries now. I wonder if the Oakland A's will hire the same forensics team that Eugene Melnick did for the Senators on the Erik Karlsson, Matt Cook play.
Yeah, see what they can find there. But or maybe he'll write a book afterwards saying he got it wrong, just like Jim Joyce in the perfect game that wasn't with Galarraga.
Well, so we might be seeing some Horatio cameos in Oakland soon.
Thank you for listening to the RPM Roundtable Podcast.